Side 3, Morrow Fox by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 101. We do not hoard treasure at Redwall. If you need victuals, we can give you a supply of the best food prepared anywhere. Loken shook his head, almost pityingly, at the simple offer. No, food doesn't interest us. There's plenty in Mossflower. Let me gather my brothers and sisters. We'll come into your abbey and take a look around. I'll wager Marl Foxes could find something of value as a ransom for your babe. Skipper of Otters wiggled a paw in one ear. Did I hear that right? You want to bring a pack of your kind inside Redwall and take a route about? Listen, Snotnose, 'tis only the grass that's green round here, not the abbey beasts. Loken drew his axe and tested the blade edge. You have until midnight. After that, you won't see Dwapple again. Shouts of indignation rang from the walltops. Don't you dare touch that, Dibbon, you stinking coward. Her big brave beast like ye, slaying little uns, you am naught but slime and mud. Harm not my precious mite, sir, I beg you. Take my life instead. For shame. You, sir, are naught but a scum wallower. Jangler Swifteye held up his paws for silence. Save your breath, friends. 'Tis wasted on the likes of that un. Listen, Fox, we'll meet you at the southwest corner of this wall at midnight. I'll see these Redwallers bring lots of pretty things to trade for Dwapple. Agreed? Loken smiled up at the squirrel. I'm glad there's one creature at Redwall with a bit of sense. I accept your offer, squirrel, but make sure whoever comes is unarmed. One false trick will cost the mouse babe his life. As the Marl Fox vanished into the ditch, the abbey gates burst open. Logalog and his blossom shrews came pouring out, rapiers drawn. They leapt into the ditch, but there was not a trace of the Marl Fox. Russell patted the shrews back as he returned through the gate. Tough luck, matey. He was just a smidgen too slow there. The shrew chieftain sheathed his rapier and helped to bar the gate. The fox just disappeared, vanished. Russell snorted. They ain't magic. I know, 'cause I pierced one of them through the shoulder with my javelin. Ha! That didn't look too magic. Scrabbling off on all fours. Jangler bounded down the wall steps. Let's go to Cavern Hole. I've got a plan. Russell called Dan, Song, and Dippler to him. Right. 'Tis about time you three started to grow up a bit. I've got a meeting with Jangler and the others in Cavern Hole, so that means we need to mount a guard on the ramparts, in case Marl Foxes or Water Rats come back. How do you feel about some sentry duty? The three friends were proud to accept. Dan spoke for them. You can trust us. We won't let Redwall down. Russell nodded approvingly at his son. Spoken like a raguba. See what old Buddy has at the gatehouse in the way of weaponry and arm yourselves. Keep a sharp eye on the woodlands, and don't be afraid to yell for help if you needs it. In the gatehouse, Friar Buddy was poring through old record books. He indicated a long, narrow corner cupboard. There's weapons in there, I think, though they've not seen the light of day in many a season. Help yourselves. Personally, I could have done with your assistance and my researches, but if you three are needed on the wall tops, then so be it. I'll come up and let you know if I discover anything about the Marl Foxes or their hidden island. Hardly a breeze stirred the treetops of Mossflower Wood. Grasshoppers chirruped and butterflies winged placidly in the shimmering midday heat on the western plains and flatlands. Beneath Dan's footpaws, the broad sandstone walkway was pleasantly warm as he paced back to the threshold from the east wall top. The young squirrel had outfitted himself with a long spear and a dented copper helmet, which he had dusted off and polished. Song had found something that fitted her paw as if it were made for her, a short, solid stick with a ball of green stone mounted on one end. She twirled it skillfully, feeling its balance as she returned from her patrol of the south battlements. Diffler was waiting at the threshold for them. The young shrew looked comical. He had found a chain-mail tunic and a crested helmet complete with visor, and was practically staggering under their weight. Beside his shrew rapier, Diffler carried an immense halberd, the heavy, long-poled weapon that is both spear and battle-axe combined. He threw up a clanking salute to his friends. "Anything to report, mates?" Dan took off his helmet and mopped his brow. "Phew! All I've got to report is that 'tis roasting under this helmet. Aren't you hot under that, Dip? Dippler was, but he would not admit it. Oh, no, matey. I'm just fine, fine. Song could not resist laughing at the small overdressed shrew. Ha, ha, ha. There's a little cloud of steam coming from under your helmet, Dip. Are you cooking a stew in there? Dan joined in the laughter. Dippler gave them both a haughty glare from beneath his rusty visor and clanked off, calling back, Laugh all you like. Outfits like this and have saved many a warrior's life. Hi, who goes there? Friend or foe beast? Sister Slowey clambered up the gatehouse wall steps, lugging a basket covered with a white cloth. She snorted at the challenge. Foe beast, indeed. Do I look like a foe beast? Craiga and Brother Melilot decided that you guards had best take lunch up here on the wall tops. Here, take this basket, Song. My paws are old and tired. The three friends felt very grown up and privileged to have lunch sent out to them as they spread the cloth and laid out the food. Dippler even removed his helmet. Well, this is the stuff to give the troops. Good old Melilot. That dandelion and burdock cordial looks nice and cool. Pour me a beaker, Dan. Look at this. Mushroom and celery turnover. Leek pasty. Apple and blackberry crumble. And a bowl of nut cream. They certainly know how to feed us wall guards at this abbey, mates. Friar Buddy joined them, carrying a big ancient volume. Deary me, Song, I wish you'd have a word with that grandma of yours. She's turned my gatehouse into a dormitory, and she and Nutwing have taken to coming there for their afternoon nap. Between them, they've driven me out with their snoring and snuffling. Song poured the old squirrel a beaker of cordial. Never mind. Fresh air is better for you than in a dusty old gatehouse, Friar. What's that book you've brought up here? The red-walled recorder opened the volume at a place he had marked. This is a chronicle from the time of Abbess Vale. I couldn't even begin to guess how many long seasons ago it was written, but it seems that two red-wallers, a squirrel named Samkim and a mole called Arula, actually found the great inland lake and knew of the lost island. Dan cut himself a slice of pasty. Is there anything in the book about marl foxes? Friar Butty flicked a few pages, indicating the state of them. I wouldn't know, Dan. Some beast left this volume outdoors and open in the rain during bygone seasons. The chapters that are of interest to us have been ruined by water. Parchment's flaked, and the ink has run. 'Tis a real mess. Dippler pawed through the spoiled pages. Bit of a shame, Friar Mate. So you didn't find out anything? Buddy stared pensively at the book. Maybe not about the foxes. But I think there's directions to the lake. Bit of a puzzle, though. Song was intrigued. She loved nothing better than solving mysteries. Here, let's all take a close look at it. We've 8 sharp eyes and 4 good brains between us. Friar Buddy, get ready with your pen and parchment to record whatever we find. In Cavern Hole, a desperate plan, calling for deception and daring, was being outlined by Jangler Swifteye. The squirrel warrior drew a square on the tabletop with charcoal. This is the outer walls. This mark here is the main gate. Tonight we meet the foxes and water rats outside at the southwest corner by the path. Make no mistake, mates, they'll come in force. Well armed, too. Show 'em one sign of weakness, and we'll all be slain. Craig's blind eyes seemed to stare straight at him. You're right, of course, Jangler. Treachery is the paw mark of foxes and vermin. So what do you propose we do? The squirrel's hooded eyes flicked idly around the table. We take every beast who can wield a weapon. Remember, I said to the fox this morning that we'd bring a selection of valuables to trade for Little Dwapple. Well, we'll be carrying 4 or 5 bundles, though only one will contain trinkets. The rest will be bundles of weapons. Me and Russell will open the bundle of trinkets, and when we gives the word, you'll all pull out the arms and attack. Me and Russell will snatch Dwapple and pass him to Craiga. She'll protect him. Logalog, some of your Gwasim shrews will be with us, but as soon as it goes dark tonight, I want you to take half your tribe out quiet-like. Go straight out onto the flatlands and sweep back so that you're well below the abbey to the south. Then get in the fields and woodland fringe. When you see the attack started, I want you to charge their rear and take them by surprise. Troglo Cellarhog scratched his head spikes. But why, Jangler? If we get the babe back, what's the point of fighting further?
We'd be best getting back inside of the Abbey, quick and safe as possible. Why stay and fight with them?
Murmurs of agreement with Troglow's reasoning came from all around the table. Jangler sighed and tossed down his charcoal stick.
Tell him why, Rusful.
Rusful Raguba pounded the tabletop slowly as he spoke, as if driving every word home.
Because they'll slaughter us if we don't get 'em first. To fight vermin, you got to think the same way they do. If they lose the babe and don't get no ransom for him, then believe me, they won't just pack up and go away. Oh, no, mates. They'll be out for revenge on Redwall, and they won't rest till they gets it.
Russell's paw rested on the table. Skipper's closed over it.
He's right. Take my affidavit on it, mates.
Craigie Badgermom nodded her huge striped head.
It's a perilous plan, but I trust our warriors. All in favor, say aye.
Every creature in Cavern Hole gave their answer without hesitation.
Aye.
Mokun had 190 water rats and 5 other marl foxes under his command, and he planned to use them well. They sat about on the creek bank as he issued final orders.
You all know what to do. Any beast who does not do it right answers to me. We move out at twilight. Rest now, but see that your weapons are attended to. Make sure those blades are sharp and ready to serve the High Queen's brood. Askrod, Vannon, which 2 do you need?
Askrod sought out the 2 they wanted.
Dackle and Belu. You will accompany me and my sister.
The 2 rats in question saluted. Mokun went and sat next to Jeltor, who was changing the dressing on his shoulder.
How goes it with your wound now, brother?
Jeltor bit his lips as he peeled off a dock leaf that had stuck to the fur around his injury.
None the better for your asking.
Mokun lay back and closed his eyes, the sunlight making him almost invisible as it dappled leaf patterns down upon his body.
Don't worry. You'll have your revenge tonight on the Redwallers. A much quicker vengeance than your idea of all-out war.
10. Florian Dugglewolf Wolfachop had decided that the best thing for creatures going into action was to inspire them with a stirring ballad. Accordingly, he kitted himself out in a heroic toga, brandished a floppy sword, and glared at his audience ferociously through a monocle with no glass in it. The Redwallers sat about in a semicircle by the abbey pond, while Florian pranced about on the water's edge and treated them to a rendition of The Battle for the Final Crumpet. Roop, the mole, accompanied him on a small accordion, and Runktip sang the refrain. Florian scowled savagely at a few tittering dibbins as he launched into the opening lines of the song.
Oh, 'twas on the umpty ninth of spring, when a duck blew on a trumpet. I led me army from behind to the battle of the final crumpet. Some wore boots, and some wore clogs, and some wore big long faces, and 2 fat moles fell down with colds before we'd marched 10 paces. At the battle of the final crumpet, I very near lost me life, when I got punched upon the nose by a big bad hedgehog's wife. Then all broke out in mutiny, when a mouse with a mustache said, Lie down, me lads, afore they charge, so they'll all think we're dead. Well, there we sat, while all around the spears and shafts were thudden, a-drinkin' goose-dog cordial wine and eatin' cabbage puddin'. We finally defeated them, when the duck tripped on his trumpet, and I got a feather in me cap, 'cause I ate the final crumpet.
Florian sang the final 2 lines while waving his sword and dancing energetically backward for effect. He stumbled on one of his outsized boots and fell into the pond to riotous applause. Skipper shook tears of helpless mirth from his eyes.
Sink me, rudder mates, we're in for a lively time if a Natin's defending the abbey tonight.
On the wall top there was great hilarity. Song, Dan, and Dippler chuckled aloud, watching the 2 moles, Roop and Muggle, trying to haul the ungainly hare from the pond. Friar Butty tapped the tattered volume with his quill.
Can we get back to our work, please?
Still smiling, the 3 friends turned to the parchment the old recorder had translated from the washed-out, ink-stained journal of Abbess Vale, a wise creature who had ruled Redwall in the far-off seasons. Dippler was no great scholar, and he stared at the friar's neat rows of writing blankly.
What does it all mean?
Friar Butty flicked the pages of the ancient book.
As far as I can make out, it was written by a squirrel called Samkim in his latter seasons. He must have been a tricky creature, though. He wrote directions to the Great Lake in the form of a riddling rhyme. Listen to this. At the rear of red stone wall, find me o'er where breaks the day. You cannot, shall not walk at all. Just follow as I run away. Discover the speechless hidden mouth. Alas, my friends, our ways part there. Go down green tunnel, bound and south, through trees with blossoms in their hair. Then when the sky shows blue and light, and clear down to the bed you gaze, be not deceived by rainbows bright. Beware tall stones and misted haze. Leaping, boiling, stealing breath, none can stand against this might, which sweeps the traveler down to death in caves of grim eternal night. And should you live to seek the lake, watch for the fish of blue and gray. Betwixt those two's the path you take. Good fortune wend you on your way.
Dippler scratched his fur beneath the weighty chainmail suit. The young Wassum Shrew was still puzzled by the cryptic words.
Sounds pretty enough, but I still ain't got a clue, mates.
Friar Buddy smiled at Dippler's inexperience.
Fiddly dee, young feller. You'd be the wisest creature around if you did. Riddling poems are not written so that we may solve them at a glance, right, Song?
The pretty young squirrel nodded as she scanned the verse.
That's correct, Friar. We need to study this thing hard, take it a line at a time, and concentrate upon the words.
Dan settled his chin on both paws, staring hard at the puzzle.
Hmm. By the look of it, this doesn't mention anything about marl foxes.
Dippler struggled out of the chain mail, which had finally become too uncomfortable for him.
Maybe it doesn't, Dan, but it might lead us to know them better. Where they come from, why they made such a journey, and so on.
Friar Buddy patted his young friend's back heartily.
Well said, Dippler. I think you've the makings of a great scholar.
Accompanied by Logalog and some of his shrews, Jangler and Russell were collecting together all the serviceable weapons they could lay paws upon. Carrying bags made from old curtain drapes, they approached the gatehouse, where Krega had told them there was a cupboard full of disused armaments. Suddenly Russell stopped so sharply that Jangler almost collided with him. Logalog looked at the warrior squirrel, who was glaring grim-faced at the wall-top.
"Russell, what's the matter, Biggie?"
Ignoring the shrew chieftain's question, Russell shouted angrily,
"Danflor Raguba, what in the name of blazes do you think you're playing at up there?"
Still sitting, poring over the writings, Dan waved cheerily down to his father.
"We're trying to solve a riddle. 'Tis all about that isle on the Great Lake and how to get there."
Russell slammed his javelin point hard into the ground.
"A warrior who's put on guard duty should be doing just that, guarding the wall-tops, not fooling about with games,"
Jangler cautioned his friend in a quiet voice.
"Go easy, mate. Dan's still only a young'un."
But Russell's unpredictable temper allowed no margin for reason.
"Supposing the foe beast launched an attack on the east wall, while you're sitting fooling about on the west wall, what then?"
Friar Buddy hastily bundled up the rhyme and passed it to Song, who stowed it in her tunic as all four stood up. The friar spread his paws wide, bowing slightly to the party below.
"You mustn't blame them, friends. 'Twas all my idea. I thought that young fresh minds would help me with my investigations."
The burly shrew Fenno pointed an accusing paw at Dippler.
"Ha! Might have known he'd be part of this. Remember what happened to our logboats when he was supposed to be guarding them, eh?"
Fenno found that he could say no more, because Logalog's rapier point was beneath his chin, forcing his head back. The shrew chieftain spoke calmly.
"Who asked your opinion, loudmouth? Keep out of this, or I'll pin your big tongue to that little thing you call a brain."
Song tried to calm things down by addressing her father.
"We really were guarding the walls. It was only when lunch arrived that we took a little break and had a look at the friar's rhyme."
Jangler Swifteye winked lazily at his daughter.
"I ain't complaining, missy. I felt good and safe down below in Cavern Hole, while you and your pals stood sentry up there."
He shrugged and nudged Russell playfully.
"Wasn't you ever young yourself, mate? Come on, let it be. Dan's a fine son, just like my Song's a good daughter. We should be proud of him."
But Russell would not let it be. He pointed an accusing paw at Dan.
"A guard's a guard, and a warrior's a warrior. Not some kind of dusty scholar. More so, if your name is Raguba. That's a title to live up to, son. Always remember that."
A voice boomed out behind them.
Stop all this. I will not have arguing and bad feeling within these Abbey walls.
Craig of Badgermum strode up, with Skipper at her side. The big otter stood forward and spoke for her.
Logalog, put up your blade, mate. 'Tis against Redwall's rules of hospitality to draw steel again another while you're a guest here. And the rest of you, hear this. If you got any grievances while you're at Redwall Abbey, then the Council of Elders will sort them out. All must live in peace here without arguing or fighting. So, settle any differences or forget them. Show an example to the young'uns, eh?
Logalog sheathed his rapier and shook Skipper's paw.
Sounds like good sense to me, messmate. Right, let's get on with gathering weapons, so we can show a little good manners to those marl foxes and water rats tonight.
The dispute broke up amid chuckles and laughter. Kreger reached out a paw and halted Russell as he moved off. The good badger spoke to him out of earshot of the rest.
You have not been here many seasons, Russell, and I know you had a hard life, but you should not have shamed your son by shouting at him in front of other beasts like that. Dan is a fine young creature, but like us all, he is bound to make mistakes. It's part of growing up. I know you honor your title of Raguba, and the way of the warrior is not an easy one. However, it is no bad thing for a warrior to have a scholar's knowledge. It can bring wisdom to his judgment and shrewdness to his thinking.
Russell patted the badger's wide paw.
You're right, of course, Marm. But 'tis no easy thing to be both father and mother to a young'un. I'm more used to fightin' than to parentin'.
Kreger turned her eyes toward him as if she could see him.
Good. Then show us what you are made of out there tonight.
5 sacks of weapons had been collected, blades and short arms that were easily concealed within the curtain bags. Supper was taken early in Great Hall, and before it was served, Skipper gave final orders.
Logalog, straight after you've eaten, take some guasum out. Go from the main gate across into the ditch, follow it north a bit, then sweep out and come back down to the south woodland fringe. We'll give you a shout when we're ready for your lot to attack from the rear. Jangler and Russell, you'll lead the party carrying the sacks of arms. Troglo and Gubbio, you'll be in charge of our own Redwallers and the rest of the shrews. When you see Jangler and Russell open the sack of trinkets, that's when you grab the weapons out of the sacks and attack. Make sure you shout and yell plenty to confuse them. I'll grab Dwapple and pass the little un safe to Kreger, and we'll get him back to the Abbey. Friar Butty, have the gate ready. And soon as Kreger and Dwapple are inside, lock it. I'll come back and join the rest of you. 'Tis a scrap I'd hate to miss. If all goes well, we should be soon banging on the gate to get back in, so listen for us, Friar. Now, Sister Slowey, Melilot, and Nutwing, you take all the elders and Dibbons down to the wine cellars. Stay there safe and silent. You'll be fine. Dan, Song, and Dippler, you three'll stay guard here in Great Hall. Make sure none enters here save Redwallers. The safety of our abbey's in your paws. So, that's the plan. Good luck to all, and blood and vinegar to our foes.
Alayo looked uncertainly at Skipper.
But they are so young, Skip. Are you sure they are ready for such a great task?
Don't worry yourself, Marm. With our plan, no rat or fox will find its way inside these walls.
Every beast pounded the tables and roared approval, though none more than Dan, Song, and Dippler, who were flushed with pride at the enormous responsibility Skipper had bestowed upon them. Badger Mom Kreger spoke when the din had died down.
I think a warrior's grace is in order before we eat. Fate and fortunes, seasons fair, be kind to us this day. Let no beast here whom we hold dear see comrades borne away. May the strong defend the weak, protect those who take part, grant victory of truth and right to warriors brave of heart. Banish the foe beast from our land, and when new seasons fall, leave not an empty space of grief amongst us at Redwall.
There was silence for a moment, then Florian Dugglewolf Wolfachop added a few lines in a stage whisper that could be heard by all.
And if on an empty tummy I'm slain, then I'll jolly well never get killed again. So pass the puddin' and fetch the pies, and I'll give the foe beast a rotten surprise.
Deesum rapped the hare's paw sharply with a spoon.
Mr. Florian, what a dreadful thing to say!
Florian wrung his paw and blew upon it.
Ouch! Save your aggression for the enemy, Marm.
I say, what a super pasty. Is that all for me, what?
Gerbil, the cellar mole, sliced off a wedge of pasty and presented it to the gluttonous hare.
This your pasty be's full of wild garlic, Meister. You may not like it. 'Tis powerful strong, hoer.
Much to the amusement of every beast, Florian ate a double helping with great relish.
Exceedingly tasty, my good mole. Garlic, you say? Well, at least I won't have much trouble bowling the enemy over. I'll just shout in their faces like this. Who are you?
Deesum fell back, clutching a serviette to her nose.
Really, sir, do you have to do that?
Rimrose helped herself to some mint wafers and maple sauce.
Were you ever in a battle, Mr. Florian?
Boracle the otter paused, a ladle half in and half out of a bowl of summer vegetable soup.
Oh, don't start him, Marm, please.
But Florian was in fine form. Piling his plate high with woodland trifle and plum tart, he put on a brave face.
Battle, did you say, Marm? I once frightened off 1,000 flippin' frogs, armed with naught but a pail of wet blackberries.
Troglo Spearback squirreled the October ale in his tankard.
Don't tell such whackin' fibs, you great furry fraud.
Deesum looked up from a slice of strawberry flan she was nibbling.
Oh, but he did. Let me tell you how it happened. We'd been picking blackberries, and had collected a small pailful, but unfortunately Baby Dwapple upset them in some mud. Mr. Florian took them down to the stream to wash them clean while we set up camp. It was in deep woodlands down southwest. While he was away, we were suddenly surrounded by masses of frogs. There must have been 1,000 of the dreadful things, and they looked very aggressive and pretty angry with us. I think it was because we had done our washing in a pool full of their tadpoles. Anyhow, they had us captured and looked as if they were planning something ugly as a punishment for the whole troop. Go on, you tell them what happened next, sir.
Florian smiled modestly from behind his heaped platter.
Oh, 'twas nothing, really. You see, I'd spotted what was going on. Those frog chaps looked rather peeved, and I thought they might harm my troop. I had the jolly old pail full of water with the blackberries in it. They'd gotten messed up a bit and looked rather mushy, but still jolly tasty, what? So I comes trundling up, pulling the dripping blackberries out of the water pail and scoffing them by the pawful, shouting out loud in a fearsome voice, "Tadpoles! Ha-ha! Tadpoles!" says I. "Nothing nicer for lunch than a perishing pail full of tadpoles, except a nice juicy green frog or two. I say, you chaps, hello there. Saved some frogs for me, what?
Ellicom shook with laughter as he recalled the incident.
Ho-ho-ho! You should have seen those frogs scatter. Some of them leapt clear over big bushes. They thought old Florian was coming to scoff 'em. Ha-ha-ha! And there he stood, cool as you like, shoving wet blackberries down his face and pretending they was tadpoles.
Florian mused around a spoonful of trifle.
Maybe some of them were. That stream was full of all manner of small black wriggly things. Blackberries, tadpoles, who could jolly well tell? Silly bloomin' frogs. Fancy taking a perfectly respectable cove like myself for a cannibal frog scoffer. Cha!
Winking broadly at Nutwing, Friar Butty shook his head sympathetically.
Indeed, how could they have made such a dreadful error?
The lively meal progressed into the evening, with the wandering Noonvale Companions troop rendering one of the songs from their repertoire in three-part harmony, with the hedgehog Rungtip acting as conductor. Logalog watched Abbey lamplighters illuminating the candles and lanterns around Great Hall as daylight's last gleam deserted long stained glass windows. Rising silently from the table, he nodded to his chosen group of Gwasim. Quietly they checked their rapiers, slings, and stone pouches, then slipped off into the gathering night, with the melodious strains of the singers echoing around the hall after them.
I paint my face or wear a mask, for I'll be any beast you ask, as I wander on my way. A skillful tumbler bounding high, a pitiful mope who'll make you cry. My actor's part I play. And what care you if I am sad, or if ill fortune I have had? 'Tis just a clown, you say. Aye, just a droll who plays a part, who travels in a painted cart, from dawn to dusk each day. An actor can be young or old,
figure of fun or hero bold. From tears to laughter without pause, I strut the stage to your applause. Then I look in my mirror and say, "Hey, what fool shall I play today?" 11. Mokin glanced up at the waning moon, setting itself behind a rambling cloud bank. Somewhere off in the woodland, a lone nightjar warbled, while a warm breeze stirred sedge and rye grasses on the ditch top. It was a night perfect for ambush. The water rats and marl foxes crouched in the ditch bed, spears and blades blackened by fire smoke so they would not betray a glimmer. The vixen Predak moved silent as a night shadow down the ditch to where the main force waited with Mokin. She gestured back toward the main abbey gate. Askrod and Vannon are in place with their two rats. Mokin ventured a swift peek over the ditch top. No sign of the red wallers yet? Predak scratched her muzzle, betraying a slight nervousness. Maybe it is a trick. Perhaps they won't come? The marl fox leader's teeth gleamed in the darkness. He kicked the bundle containing Dwapple, who had been fed a potion of herbs to keep him in a drugged sleep. Oh, they'll come. Take my word on it. Those abbey beasts are far too honest and dull to risk any tricks. This mouse babe is their main concern. Being the virtuous fools they are, they'll expect us to play by their rules and return the babe in exchange for a few trinkets. Oops. They'll learn that dealing with marl foxes is like trying to hold a pawful of smoke. Logalog stood with his gossam shrews well hidden by the bushy southeast fringe of mossflower. Dodging from fern clump to long grass, the scout Bargle arrived and nodded over toward the ditch.
"Vermin are still there, Chief. They ain't made a move back or forward. Couldn't get close enough to hear what they was saying."
The shrew chieftain peered through the night toward the ditch. "It doesn't make any difference, mate. We never came to chat with them." Bargle pawed his rapier hilt thoughtfully. "You know, they don't know we're here, but we know exactly where they are. Mayhap 'twouldn't be a bad idea to sneak up behind them and pick off a few to thin their ranks, eh?"
Logalog sighed regretfully.
"I was thinking the same thing myself, matey. But we'd best stick to the plan and wait for the signal."
Bargle was weighing the land up.
"That's a fair distance to charge, from here across open ground to the southwest wall corner. We could become targets in plain view."
Logalog ruffled his scout's ears fondly.
"Then we'll just have to spread out and duck and weave."
"Aye, and get ourselves killed for creatures who ain't even shrews."
Logalog turned to the speaker.
"I knowed it wouldn't take long for you to pipe up, Fenno. When all this is over, me and you are going to take a stroll in the forest, outside, where we won't be abusing Redwall's rules."
Fenno glared at the smaller and older figure.
"I'll look forward to it. I'm sick of you pushing me around."
Logalog's paw shot out and dragged Fenno forward by his ear.
"So be it. But until then, you can stay in front where I can see you. I don't want you behind me when the action starts."
Dan, Song, and Tippler watched as Sister Slowey and Brother Melilot guided Elders and Dibbins downstairs to the wine cellars. Melilot waved to them from the stairwell.
"They're all accounted for. You can leave them to us now."
Song saluted him with her greenstone-tipped stick.
"Thanks, brother. We'll be up here if you need us."
Tippler crossed Great Hall to where the main party were assembled. Skipper hid a smile as the small chainmail-laden figure trundled up.
"You're a fearsome sight, matey.
Now don't forget, and bar the door as soon as we leave. And don't lift that bar to any beast, except us, when we gets back. Clear?"
Tippler tried a fancy salute and almost tripped over the huge halberd he was toting.
"Clear, Skip. I won't even let an ant pass."
Krega placed her paw on the wonderful tapestry, touching the spot where stood the likeness of Martin the Warrior.
"Guide us to victory this night, and let us bring the mouse babe back to Redwall unharmed. Rustful, Jangler, lead on."
They passed through the main wall gate, treading carefully to stop the weapons clanking in their sacks. Friar Butty and Nutwing held the gates open, wishing the rescuers good luck as they went.
"Let's hope all goes well, Troglo." "Oh, it'll be all right. Just make sure you stay awake, Nutwing."
Stay awake yourself. You'll need your wits about you out there tonight."
"Aye, we will that. See you later, eh, Friar?"
"I certainly hope so, my friend, with all my heart."
Standing out on the path, the old squirrel recorder and his owl companion watched the procession start south down the path. They did not even feel the draft from the swirling cloaks of Askarad and Vannon, as the two Marl foxes, accompanied by the rats Dackle and Bilu, slipped into Redwall like poor dark wraiths. From the shadows of the wall steps, the vermin intruders watched while Butty and Nutwing secured the gates, chunnering away at each other as old friends always do.
"Come on, you ancient featherbag. Lift your end of the bar."
I am lifting. Faw, this bar gets heavier every day. Are you sure you're lifting your end, old Bushtail?
Of course I am. Right, up, two, three. There, that does it. What's the matter now? You've got a face on you like a squashed pie.
Got something sticking in my leg.
Let me see. Oh, 'tis only a splinter. Come in the gatehouse and I'll get it out. Stop hopping about like a one-legged duck.
Only a splinter, he says. Feels more like a log to me.
The trespassers waited until the gatehouse door closed before making their way across the silent lawns toward the abbey. Craiga was not too familiar with the outside path and allowed Skipper to guide her toward the southwest corner where the rendezvous was to take place.
Are they there as they said they'd be, Skip?
Russell's voice murmured low to one side of Craiga.
I see the scum. They're lying in the ditch, spear tops poking up.
Jangler's eyes shifted under their heavy lids.
Right, mate. I sees them myself now. There's that Marl fox climbing out, two rats behind him. They're carrying something. Looks like the mouse babe done up in a sack.
The Redwallers halted at the southwest corner. As Moken walked forward, the other three Marl foxes led the water rats out of the ditch in a pincer movement to form a semicircle in front of the Redwallers, standing with their backs to the wall. Jangler nodded curtly to Moken.
Well, Fox, got a little one with you?
At a signal from Moken, two rats dumped the sack containing Dwapple in front of the Marl fox. He placed a footpaw on it.
He's right here. Brought the valuables with you?
Jangler indicated the Redwallers bearing the curtain bags.
We've brought 'em, but you don't get to see one trinket until you show us the mouse babe unharmed.
Moken smiled thinly and bowed slightly to his adversary.
My compliments. You show good sense. Show them the mouse babe.
One of the water rats sprang forward and slit the sack expertly with a small thin dagger. Baby Dwapple rolled out, curled in a ball and snoring uproariously. Moken pointed to the curtain bags.
Now let's see the ransom.
Jangler winked at Russell.
Open her up, mate.
Between them, the two squirrel warriors ripped aside the ties on the bag of trinkets they were carrying, smashing it in the faces of Moken and his companions with a mighty roar.
Redwall!
Then the action began at an alarming rate. Skipper hurled himself headlong at the ground, snatching Dwapple and laying flat two rats with flailing footpaws and thwacking tail rudder. Redwallers tore open the bags of weapons and went straight at it. Skipper placed Dwapple in the paws of Craiga, and between them they battled their way through a sea of water rats, regardless of slashing blades and stabbing spears. Craiga, who had once been the mightiest of badger warriors, roared like thunder splitting the skies. With Dwapple's tunic gripped in her teeth, she lashed out with both paws, ripping, wounding, and slaying every beast that came within the range of her frightening destructive power, snapping spears like matchwood, and bending blades like green twigs. Troglo Spearback had a large bung hammer, which he swung with both paws, and the rest grabbed what they could, yelling wildly,
"Red wool! Blood and vinegar!"
Marlfox axes slashed the air, and spears bristled in the night as the vermin pressed in. Any beast unfortunate enough to fall was trampled flat in the melee. Though they were heavily outnumbered, the Noonvale troop were giving a splendid account of themselves. Florian had formed them into a tight circle. Standing at its center, wielding a long grass rake, dealing out devastating blows over the heads of his companions to the rats who pressed them in on all sides, the lanky hare boomed out his challenge.
"Come on, babe-stealers, try me for size, what? I'm the son of the rip-snortin', rap-tippin' Will the Chop. Try stealing me away in a sack, and I'll peel your hides to the bone and feed you to each other."
As soon as he heard the war cry of Redwall being shouted over by the southwest corner, Logalog drew his rapier and roared out the battle call of the Gwasom Shrews. Log-a-log-a-log-a-log-a-log! Charge! The shrews took off at a dead run across the open land, whirling slings and slashing the air with their short rapiers. Gripped by the heat of the charge, Log-a-log sped past Fenno, who had conveniently stumbled and tripped. The brave shrew chieftain had made a fatal error, and the coward seized his chance. Jumping up, he threw his rapier like a spear, straight into the unprotected back of his chief. Log-a-log staggered on a few paces, then fell unnoticed in the night by the other shrews who were running eagerly into battle. Sudden panic at the ruthless murder he had committed gripped Fenno. Turning, he fled back into the cover of Mossflower Wood. Meanwhile, Skipper pounded on the main abbey wall gate, calling urgently to the gatekeepers,
"Open up, mates! We got the little un! Hurry now! Craigamarm's wounded!"
It took a moment or two for Buddy and Nutwing to lift the heavy crossbeam out of its holders. Then the gate creaked open. Skipper pushed Craiga and Waffle inside, baring his teeth in a ferocious grin at the two elders.
"Take care of 'em. I'm off back to the fightin'."
Moken knew that his side had the upper paw. Triumphantly, he was shouting orders to his marl foxes.
"Predak, keep 'em pinned to the wall. Jeltor, attack those two squirrel warriors. Keep them busy. Zyro, take more rats. Stop that hare and his creatures breaking through the cordon."
Swinging his double-headed axe, Moken pressed forward savagely, fully intent on inflicting total retribution on the Redwallers, whose courageous but foolish ruse had gone awry. 12. The water rat Bilu stood on the lawn at the back of Redwall Abbey. His keen eyes soon spotted what he was after, a small dormitory window, below which was a protuberance in the shape of a gargoyle head carved onto a thick spur of sandstone. Bilu unwound a plaited hide rope from around his waist, freeing the three-pronged grapnel hook hanging from it. The water rat gave the tough, thin rope a few swings, paying it out as he whirled the grapnel in a wide circle. When he was ready, he released the rope at the crucial point, allowing the hook to soar upward and latch over the gargoyle with a dull clank of metal striking stone. Bilu stood stock still and waited for several moments, listening intently. When he was sure no beast had heard the noise, he began to climb swiftly, hauling himself up paw over paw, with both footpaws braced firmly against the wall. Once up to the window, he chose a tiny pane. Opening his belt pouch, he drew forth a piece of bark, plastered with a thick compound of honey and soil, which he stuck to the window pane. There was virtually no sound as he dealt the bark a sharp tap with his dagger handle, but still he paused and waited. After a short time, he peeled the bark from the thin glass, shards of broken windows sticking to it like crystal. Cautiously, the rat loosened more broken pieces from the pane, dropping them to the grass below. When he had enough space to work, Bilu put his paw through the hole he had made and undid the catch. A moment later, he was inside the abbey and on the dormitory staircase. Dippler sat in the big ornate chair that had been used by all the abbots and abbesses of Redwall. The young shrew impudently placed his footpaw on the table and leaned back, lifting the visor of his heavy-crested helmet. "Wonder how 'tis going out at the southwest corner." Dan had his old copper helmet full of hazelnuts, which he was lining up on the floorstones and cracking with light taps of his spear butt. He winked confidently at the shrew. "I'll wager those marl foxes and their water rats are sorry they ever captured Dwapple. Our side'll be giving 'em blood and vinegar and their own tails for supper. What do you think, Song?" The young squirrel was standing in front of the tapestry, admiring the heroic figure of Martin the Warrior. "Oh, there's no doubt that the vermin are onto a good hiding, and a lesson they won't forget. With warriors like your father and mine, and Skipper, we can't lose. Just look at this picture of Martin. I'll wager he could have cleared up the lot single-pawed." Dan stooped to gather the hazelnuts. "No beast could stand against Martin. Do you know, his sword hangs in Craig of Badger Mum's room? Funny, though. The elders say that he often appears in dreams to Redwallers to give advice and warn us if the Abbey's in danger. Wonder why he never appeared this time." Dippler tried unsuccessfully to straighten the rusty fold of his chainmail as he sprawled in the big chair. "Oh, I suppose Martin knows we can take care of ourselves. Don't forget, besides your father's, there's my chieftain Log-a-log and a few score of Gwasom fighters to deal with." "What's that?" Song turned from the tapestry.
"What's the matter, Dip?
Did you hear a noise?"
Dan tossed a hazelnut and caught it in his mouth.
"No.
What sort of noise was it?"
Dippler struggled out of the big chair. Sort of like a clanky sound. Song stole a pawful of Dan's hazelnut kernels.
Ha ha ha. That'd be yourself, Dip. You make clanky sounds every time you move in all that old armor.
Bilu passed by the three young friends, hugging the shadows at the north end of Great Hall. When he reached the abbey door, he stood still a while. Song and her companions had their backs to him, but there was no sense in taking chances. Pulling a small flask of vegetable oil from his pouch, he dripped it onto the bolts and hinges, and then, ever cautious, he gave it another couple of moments, listening to the gossip and laughter of the three youngsters out at the hall center. The lock slid back smoothly, with scarce a sound or scrape. Bilu held his breath as he swung the door slowly open to admit the two Marl foxes, Askrod and Vannon, who had been waiting outside with the other rat, Dackel. Bilu placed a paw on his lips, indicating the three youngsters who had been left to guard the abbey. Dackel nodded, but Askrod and Vannon were not paying any attention to Bilu. Their eyes were riveted on the wondrous tapestry that graced the west wall. Friar Butty inspected the ugly gashes that had slashed through Craig's paws when she had been grabbing sword and spear blades. He dabbed at them with a cloth that he was dipping in a water pail.
"Be still now, Marm, please. You'll have to stay here in the gatehouse a while yet. There's no question of moving you, I'm afraid."
Nutwing spread a curtain across the mouse babe, Dwapple, who was still snoring in the armchair.
Been given lots of motherwort and a smidgen of valerian, I suspect. He'll probably sleep a good while. Nasty. It looks like our badger has lost an ear."
Friar Butty took a peek, drawing in his breath sharply.
"Great season, so she has. And will you look at this broken arrowhead sunk into her shoulder near the neck? Gracious me, Craigamarm, didn't it hurt you at the time?"
Spread out on the couch, the huge badger snorted wearily.
"I never felt a thing. In the old days, when I could see, they called me Craigor Rose Eyes, you know. My rage was so great in battle that nothing could stop me. I was possessed by a thing called the Blood Wrath, like most badger warriors."
The friar shook his head worriedly.
"I'll have to go up to the abbey. 'Twill take Sister Slowey's herb satchel, sewing twine, and clean dressings to patch you upright. Now stay there and don't move."
Nutwing ambled out of the gatehouse, muttering as he went.
"I'll go. I can still flap these stiff old wings a bit. You stay here, Buddy, in case any beast of ours comes knocking on the gate. I won't be long."
The old owl hopped and flapped, sometimes touching the ground, other times with the grass tops brushing his talons. Faintly upon the night air, he could hear the sound of conflict from over the outer wall at the southwest corner. Surprised to find the main abbey door half open, he shuffled in, blinking his eyes against the lantern and candle lights, and walked straight into the backs of Dackel and Bilu. Still blinking, he called out,
"Who's there? Is that Melilot?" "Nutwing, look out, get away!"
At the sound of the owl's voice, Song had looked up. She saw the four vermin in plain view, creeping toward them. Askrod grabbed Nutwing. Using the flapping owl as a shield, he and his cohorts rushed the three young guards. Song was dashing towards the Marl foxes, her greenstone stick raised. Dan and Dippler seized their spears and charged after her. Dippler's helmet fell over his eyes, and the monstrous halberd he was lugging slipped sideways. Both he and Dan tripped on the shaft and went sprawling on the floor. Song was almost upon the Marl foxes, her eyes glinting with the light of battle. Askrod swung his double-headed axe, slaying Nutwing with a single blow. He pushed the owl's still-flapping body at Song, bringing her down. The young squirrel's scream of horror was cut short as the axe handle cracked down on her head. Vannon and the two rats were upon Dan and Dippler before they could rise. Vannon's axe crashed down on the young shrew's helmet, leaving a long dent in it. Dan struggled to get up, but both rats jumped on him, cracking his head back hard upon the floorstones. Askrod sped across to the tapestry and began pulling it from the wall. A hubbub came from somewhere below, and the Marl foxes heard the sounds of Redwallers on the wine cellar stairs. Vannon glanced about at the three fallen friends.
"What about these? Shall I finish them off?"
Askrod had pulled a chair across to the tapestry so he could reach the top hooks that held it to the wall. He snarled at his sister.
"Idiot, what concern are they to us? This is the most valuable thing we've come on in many a season. Help me with it. Bilu, get outside and open the small east wall gate. Dackel, lend a paw over here. Move, you fools! Those Abbey beasts will be on our heels in a moment. Hurry!
At the southwest corner, the fortunes of war had changed. Mogan fought his way back through his own ranks until he was close to the ditch. It was the Gwasom Shrews who had saved the day. Charging wildly in at the rear of their foe's left flank, they swept all before them. As the enemy turned to intercept the Gwasom attack, Skipper, Jangler, and Russell led a push away from the wall into the ranks of the water rats. Mokin was shouting now, realizing he had lost.
Retreat! Get across the ditch onto the flatlands! Retreat!
Russell went down with a spear in his side, but Jangler stood over him, swinging his loaded sling. Russell was half up when he cried out,
Behind your mate, quick!
Jangler spun like lightning, his whirling sling wrapping itself around the handle of the killing axe that the vixen Zyril was swinging at his head. He pulled sharply, dragging the short double-headed axe from her paws. Quick as a flash, the warrior squirrel caught the axe and swung at Zyril with all his might. That single blow finished the battle completely. The water rats, who saw the beheaded Zyril lying on the path, set up a wailing scream.
A marl fox is slain! A marl fox is slain!
In the blink of an eye, the remaining marl foxes and water rats had abandoned the fight, leaping over the ditch and dashing headlong across the flatlands. Florian Dugglewolf Wolfachop waved his garden rake and started after the routed enemy, haranguing loudly.
Villains! Fiends! Polywoggling babe-snatchers! You shall feel our wrath! We will pursue you to the very crux of doom! Come on, you chaps! Charge!
Skipper grabbed Florian's frock coat tails and hauled him back.
Leave it, matey. They still outnumber us 2-1. Let them go. We got our own to tend back here.
Victory over the foe beast had been won, but at a terrible price. The Noonvale otter Boracle sat wounded, cradling Elikim's head in his lap, repeating over and over,
My brother won't wake up. Wake up, Elikim, please.
Runktip took the slain otter gently from his grieving brother.
He ain't going to wake up, friend Boracle.
Leave him to me. Jangler hauled Russell upright and supported him.
You all right, Cully? That's a spear you got growing out of your side.
Russell gasped and winced as Jangler removed the weapon.
Never went in too deep. I'll live, mate. But that's more than I can say for some who weren't so lucky.
Skipper stooped over Troglo's spearback, patting the cellar hog's face and talking gently to him.
Trog, come on, old lad. Don't go sleeping there. We'll get you back home to a nice soft bed. Wake up now.
The old hedgehog's eyes fluttered open, and he smiled weakly.
Slingshot. Must have been a bit of metal. It's still stuck in my head.
A heart-piercing cry came from out on the open ground to the south.
Logga, 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 log. Our chieftain's down.
Florian, who was helping Runktip to carry Elikim's body, looked around at the sound of the voice.
What in the name of seasons is that?
The Gwasom Shrew Mayan strode up, ashen-faced.
"'Tis the Gwasom death cry. Logalog is slain. Bargle found him.
Surprisingly enough, it was Florian who restored order and got things moving.
Now there's been terrible battle done here this night, you know, chaps. But we must attend the living first.
Right. Pick up the wounded and let's get him inside the abbey. When that's taken jolly good care of, I'll organize a party to return for our fallen comrades. Come on now, please. Can't sit about here weeping all night. What?
Skipper shouldered Troglo's spear back, regardless of his spikes.
Mr. Florian's right, mates. Come on, let's get inside. There'll be elders and young'uns waiting to hear whether we won or not.
Emerging from the cloud shadow, a pale moon cast its soft radiance over the dusty path at Redwall's southwest corner, where so much had been won and lost that night. 13. Song felt a cool, damp cloth bathing her brow as Grandma Alayo soothed away at the red-hot hammers of pain pounding inside her temples. From somewhere above, she could hear her mother's worried voice calling her back to consciousness. Gradually, her eyelids flickered open. She was lying on the floor of Great Hall, with her head resting on Rimrose's lap. Jangler hovered anxiously in the background, pacing to and fro. When she spoke, Song's voice came from far off, as if it belonged to some other creature.
Marl foxes, where are they? Nutwing?
Jangler breathed a sigh of relief.
he knelt by his daughter.
My little song breeze, thank the seasons you got ahead as hard as your old dad's.
Groggily, Song allowed herself to be led to a chair. She sipped a potion, which Sister Slowey pressed upon her, gazing over the beaker rim at her two friends. Dippler's head was swathed in bandages, and poor old Gubbio was showing the dazed Gwasom Shrew a massive dent in the big helmet he had been wearing.
"Hur, hur, Meister, you have lucky young Emlet saved thee. Your head was like to have been sliced in two, bur I."
Dippler touched his bandaged pate gingerly.
"Ooh, it feels like this here lump is another head growing atop my own."
"Aye, aye, Song. You awake at last? Where's Dad?" The young squirrel was sitting hunched on a form, bent forward as Brother Melilot tended an ugly swelling at the back of his head. He winced silently as a compress was applied. The good brother finished binding the damp herbs and patted Dan.
"Pity 'tisn't winter. Ice would have worked well on that bump. But there you are, Dan, good as new. You'll live, young'un."
Dan stood shakily and stared about, seemingly unable to remember.
"Phew! I feel terrible. What happened?"
Russell pushed aside two helpers who were dressing the wound in his side. Pulling himself upright on his javelin, the warrior squirrel glared contemptuously at his son.
"What happened? I'll tell you what happened. You were left to guard the abbey, and you let yourself get knocked silly by a couple of vermin. Nutwing was slain, aye, and the great red wall tapestry was stolen from the wall. That's what happened.
Were you playing more games, solving puzzles, was it?
No, 'twas cracking nuts, I see, by the shells all over the floor. Well, while you were doing that, the foe beast got in here, cracked your nut, murdered an abbey bird, and robbed the very symbol of Redwall.
Called yourself a raguba?
Ha!"
Quivering with rage, Russell snapped his javelin in two pieces and flung them from him, tears of anger glittering in his eyes.
"I wish that spear had gone right through and slain me, rather than stand here and see the raguba blood shamed by a son of mine. Coward!"
Turning his face from Dan, Russell limped off, out to the orchard to sit and brood while he tended his own injury. Brother Melilot put a paw about Dan, shaking his head in disgust at Russell's outburst.
How could a creature say that about his own son?
Dan tried to keep his face straight as tears poured unchecked down his cheeks. Jangler hurried across and threw a comforting paw around the young squirrel's shoulder.
"Shush now, Dan, mate. Your dad didn't mean it. You couldn't have done any more than you did, all three of you."
The Gwasom Shrew man marched in and threw a salute to Bargle, who was acting as temporary logalog.
"They left by the east wall gate, chief. I made sure it was all locked and secure. Ahoy there, Dip. Still alive, eh, mate?"
Dippler smiled sheepishly and held up his battered headgear.
"Aye, but they killed this Elmet. Was there any sign of a man?"
The shrew poured himself a beaker of October ale and blew off the froth before drinking.
"No, not a hair. They're long gone. All's quiet out there now, except for Mr. Florian and the others. They're putting our lost ones to rest altogether, just by the southwest wall corner inside the abbey grounds. 'Tis a sad business, mates, very sad."
Dippler looked away, scrubbing at his eyes with a spare bandage.
"Ah, poor Nutwing. If only we'd been faster."
"You mustn't blame yourself," said Man. "Three young ones against that evil scum? You didn't stand a chance. And you've heard that Logalog is gone?"
"The Logalog was like a father to me. That old shrew'll live forever in my memory. Wish I could get me paws on the vermin who slayed him. I'd make the scum pay, matey."
Bargle looked up, surprised that Dippler did not know the truth.
"'Twern't no vermin that killed Logalog. He never made it as far as the battle, Dip. The scum that murdered him was Fenno. We found that in his rapier buried in the chief's back."
Despite his injury, the young shrew's teeth ground together hard.
"Fenno, that big bully, where is he?"
Bargle accepted the beaker from Mayon and took a swig.
"No beast knows. Fenno ran off like the slime that he is."
Dippler drew his rapier and licked the blade as a true Gwasom warrior does before making a solemn oath.
"Then I'll find Fenno someday. And when I do, this blade'll be wetted with something else. My name is Dippler, and my word is as true as my sword."
Gerbil Sellermole came bustling down from the dormitories, shaking her head as she counted off bed spaces for the wounded on both paws.
"You young'uns, Danflo, Dippler, and Miss Songer, you'm all in Mom Kreger's room, while she am a-laying in a gatehouse. Though, dearie, I don't know how she's going to go on when she yours about poor Nutwing.
Song's mother took charge.
Right. Come on, you three, upstairs with you, and rest those heads.
Jangler took a stroll out to the orchard, where he seated himself beneath a pear tree next to Russell.
So, me old mate, you reckon your son shamed the name Raguba?
Russell stared straight ahead into the moon-shadowed stillness.
Well, what do you think?
Reaching up, Jangler plucked a pear and rubbed it on his jerkin.
For what 'tis worth, I think you're a great warrior, strong in paw and brave in war. We carved a few paths in our younger seasons, you and me. We're still good pals, and always will be. But let me say this to you, Russell Raguba. I never knew you was a foolish beast until tonight. Our young'uns are the hope of the future. They need to be helped, not humiliated. It took no bravery to call Dan a coward. He loves you too much to answer back. So all you did was to bring shame on yourself, by the way you talked to Dan. No, don't answer or argue. Just think about it, matey. And that's the advice of a friend.
Without further comment, Jangler Swifteye rose and walked off, leaving Russell to wrestle with the problems of his own stubbornness. The three friends lay on Craig Badgermum's big sofa. All three felt terrible about Nutwing. Dan felt it most. It was clear his father's onslaught had hurt him deeply. They sat a while in silence, heads still throbbing, unable to sleep. Dan's eyes wandered to the sword of Martin the Warrior, hanging upon the wall. And suddenly he sat bolt upright.
Yes, now I remember.
Dippler cringed, putting paws to his ears.
Well, you don't have to shout about it, mate.
What do you remember? Dan got up and went to the sword, as if drawn to it by a magnet.
When I was knocked senseless, he spoke to me, Martin the Warrior.
Song was curious. She watched Dan attentively.
Well, don't stand there gawping at the sword. Tell us. What did he say to you?
Dan automatically spoke the words triggered by the sight of the marvelous blade that Martin had once wielded.
Four chieftains going forth to bring back Redwall's heart. Vengeance, honor, friendship, each will play their part. The flower bears my blade, and Greenstick, warrior's daughter, join with the short sword bearer, and one who lives by water. Before the herald lark, ere night's last teardrop falls, with none to bid you fond farewell, go, leave these old red walls.
Dippler stared at his two friends.
Sounds great, but what does it mean?
Song shook her head in despair at the young shrew.
Honestly, Dip, you're the blinkin' limit. It means we three are going to go out there and bring back the tapestry.
Dippler thought about this a moment.
But we're not four chieftains.
The pretty squirrel maid shrugged.
Well, I can't help that. If Martin has spoken, we must obey.
Though you're right, Dip. There are one or two things about the verse that puzzle me. For instance, Dan said, "The flower bears my blade." Who in the name of acorns is the flower?
Well, don't go shouting it all around the abbey.
But it's me. Song stifled a giggle at Dan's reluctant confession.
You?
I never knew you were called Flower. Dan looked defiant.
"'Twas my mother's idea. Dad wanted me named Danblood, said it was a proper warrior's name, but Mom wouldn't hear of it. She insisted I be called Danflower. So that's my real name. But Dad and me shortened it to Danflor, after my mother died.
Well, Song, you carry the green stick, and you're a warrior's daughter. Dip, you got the rapier, that's a short sword, so that's the three of us, even though we ain't chieftains. Who the fourth is, the one who lives by water, huh? Who knows? But 'tis plain we three must go.
Dippler brightened up as the poem's meaning began to sink in. Aye, Redwall's heart is the tapestry.
I understand now, mates. We've got to leave the abbey before dawn. Song interrupted the young Wassum excitedly.
Of course. Listen, here's the first few lines from an old song, one of the first I ever learned, called Daybreak.
Before the herald lark, ere night's last teardrop falls, like dewdrop from a rose, the rising minstrel calls.
That's the first bit.
Oh, dear, I wonder why we've got to go with none to bid us farewell.
Dan snorted mirthlessly at his friend's innocence. "'Tis obvious. 'Cause they'd stop us, that's why. Huh. Imagine my father. He'd say we were off to play some silly games. Then there's your mom and dad and Grandma Elio. You think they'd be pleased to see you wandering off into a woodland full of water rats, marl foxes, and who knows what else? Song nodded ruefully. They'd stop us for sure. Dan reached up carefully and took down the sword from its pins on the wall. Martin the warrior's weapon felt like wildfire in his paws. He held the black-bound grip with its red pommel stone and cross-tree hilt, feeling the perfect balance of the lethally sharp blade. Double-edged, strangely chased and patterned down to the perilous tip, keen as an icicle honed by midwinter gales. Song and Dippler touched their paws to the sword as Dan's voice sounded firm and resolute. "We bring the tapestry back to Redwall Abbey." Dippler looked from one to the other. "If I can, I'll avenge my chieftain Logalog." Song smiled at them both. "I go with you because you are my friends." Dan picked up a broad old belt from the shelf and fastened it across one shoulder to his waist belt. He thrust the sword through the broad belt, so that it was flat across his back, the hilt showing above his other shoulder. "Well, what are we waiting for, mates? 'Twill be dawn soon. Come on."
Act 2. Four Chieftains Going Forth. 14. Camouflaged by the morning sun-tinged leaves of a horse chestnut tree, the marl fox Mokin sat in a fork amid the high branches, watching the scene below on the stream bank, listening carefully to all that was said. He was cunning and highly intelligent, always cautious to know which way the wind was blowing among his brothers and sisters. Accordingly, Mokin had made it back to the camp shortly after dawn, and finding that he was first to return, he hid in the tree and watched the reactions as the rest filtered back to the camp in small groups. First to arrive were Askrod and Bannon, with the rats Dackle and Bilu. They draped the tapestry over some bushes, prepared a scratch meal, and sat back to gloat over their plunder. Predak the vixen came next, heading a group of rats, followed by her brother Jeltor at the head of a second band. Cooking fires were lit, and some prepared food, while others tended their wounds. By the time the sun was fully up, the final few had returned. Askrod and Vannon, with their two rats, were the stars of the day, proudly showing off the wondrous tapestry. "How's that for a nice bit of thieving, eh?" "Aye, we were right inside that abbey for a good while. Wounded three, killed one, and trotted off with this beauty. Pity we never had time for a proper look around. I reckon Redwall's stuffed with treasures." "They're not so tough. I slew a big owl, stupid creature. Huh, the three we laid out are probably dead by now, too. I whacked a shrew wearing armor so hard that my axe paw still tingles."
Askrod stood over Jeltor, smiling whimsically.
"So, how did the attack go? Not too well by the look of you lot."
Jeltor flexed his shoulder to get the movement back in it. Grim-faced, he spat viciously into the fire.
"Alag, what's the head count?"
Farther down the stream bank, the water rat called back to Jeltor.
173, sire. I'm just numbering the wounded."
Jeltor lay back, watching the blue-gray campfire smoke wreathing among the shafts of sunlight between the trees.
"That's nearly a score of rats lost. Then there was Zyril, too."
Vannon tossed aside her food and stood upright.
"What? You mean our sister Zyril was slain?"
"Oh, she was slain, sure enough. I saw her head lying on the ground. The one who did it was a big squirrel. Looked as if he was half asleep. Janglur, they called him. I'll remember that one's name."
Askrod stroked the tasseled tapestry border thoughtfully.
"A marl fox slain. High Queen Sylph won't be well pleased to hear that. What about our glorious leader Mokin and his grand plan?"
Jeltor kicked a branch hanging from the fire, sending sparks showering as the dead pine crackled.
"Mokin. Don't talk to me about him. He left it too late for a quick ambush. Wanted to stand round chatting with the Redwallers. It was them who attacked us. There's no doubt about it. They got some fierce warriors, and they were quick, too. For a while there, we thought we had them. They were outnumbered. But then we were hit from behind by gangs of those Gwasom shrews. Don't know where they came from. That was when we lost the advantage. Next thing, Mokin's yelling for every beast to retreat, and we had to run for it, like a rag-tailed bunch of amateurs. I'm not surprised Mokin hasn't shown his face around camp yet. Bungler.
As Jeltor finished speaking, Moken hobbled into camp, bent almost double and limping badly, his face creased with pain. He held up a paw for silence before any creature could speak further.
"All right, all right. 'Twas all my fault. I messed it up by taking those red wallers for fools, which they weren't. But hear me. You all fought a gallant fight. I couldn't ask for braver beasts in my command, particularly you, Brother Jeltor, and you, Sister Predak."
Here he paused for effect, shaking his head sadly.
"And our dear Sister Zyril, so treacherously slain after I had called retreat. How can I go back to our Mother Queen Sylth and tell her that poor Zyril is with us no more? Jeltor, you were right, brother. I should have listened to you."
The Marl Foxes were slightly bewildered. Moken had never spoken like this before, but had always been arrogant and imperious. Vannon tapped the handle of her axe against the tapestry.
"It wasn't a total loss. Look what we took from the abbey."
Moken had been looking at the thing for over an hour from the tree limb, but he put on an expression of awed astonishment and approached the object reverently.
"You stole this? Wondrous, beautiful. It must be beyond price. Well, congratulations to you. Our mother will be overjoyed to see such a splendid and magnificent prize. At least poor Zyril didn't give her life in vain. But remember what she said here only a day ago. Blood calls for blood. It is the code of Marl Foxes, our law. Redwall and its creatures must pay dearly for our sister."
Jeltor drew his axe and brandished it in Moken's face.
"Like I said at first, we should have gone to war."
Moken sat down by the fire with agonizing slowness, biting his lip.
"Aye, brother, you were right. I was the fool. Now I am sorely wounded and unfit to lead. Leave a few good rats here with me, so that we may guard your plunder. I need rest. I may never walk again with these injuries. Split our forces up between the four of you, and take vengeance upon those Redwall scum. Go quickly before they become confident and begin combing the woodlands for our blood. Surround Redwall Abbey. Kill them one by one, with the cunning that is the pawmark of a Marl Fox. Snipe at them. Starve them by keeping them penned up inside their abbey. Make them prisoners inside their own home."
Jeltor's eyes lit up, fired by plans of conquest.
"We'll besiege them until they crawl out begging to be spared. Then I'll execute the one that wounded me, and we'll take revenge on the squirrel Janglor for Zyril's death. Those whom we spare can be dragged back to our island in chains to service."
Moken clasped his brother's paw with feigned fervor.
"Ah, ever the wise warrior, Jeltor. But you must hurry and set up your siege while they are unaware of your brilliant plan."
Within a short time, the army was ready to march again, each of the Marl Foxes commanding 20 water rats apiece, while Moken stayed behind to recover and protect the tapestry with a guard comprising the 13 remaining rats. Moken lay back as if he had fainted away, listening keenly to Vannon murmuring instructions to the water rat Bilu.
"I leave you here to guard our prize with your life. If Moken recovers and tries anything odd, you must hide the tapestry and make your way to Redwall, where you will report to me only."
As the army marched out of camp, Moken turned on his side, chuckling under his breath.
"Never trust a vixen."
It was close to noontide when Song called a halt at a shady glade in the mossflower depths.
"This looks like a good spot for our lunch. There's some fat, juicy berries on those blackberry brambles round the dead oak."
Dippler unshouldered the pack he had loaded from the kitchens.
"Lunch? What happened to breakfast, miss? And just one other thing. When do we sleep? Last time I closed my lids was when I was knocked unconscious. We missed a full night's shut-eye, you know."
Song threw her haversack down and began picking blackberries.
"Oh, give your little face a rest, Dip. Stop moaning."
Dan took off his sword and food pack and sat down gratefully.
"Dip's not moaning, Song. He's arguing. Gwasom shrews aren't happy unless they've got something to argue about, right, Dip?"
The young shrew opened his haversack, fishing out three of Brother Melilot's new-baked scones and a slab of cheese, which he cut into three pieces with his rapier.
"I'm not arguing or moaning. It's called debating. That's how us Gwasom get to be so wise, by debating."
Song aimed a berry at him, but Dippler ducked it.
"You greedy little hog.
I notice you've given yourself the biggest slice of cheese and the largest scone.
Dippler grinned, popping the blackberry Song had thrown into his mouth.
But I need extra victuals, so I can grow big and strong and stronger, like you two. If I gave you the big bits, then you'd both grow bigger and stronger, and I'd be little and thin.
Song prodded his small round stomach as she passed.
Thin, huh? You're about as thin as a hedgehog who's been locked in a larder for 2 seasons.
Dan opened a flask of Penny Cloud cordial.
Will you two pack in debatin' and let me have lunch in peace?
Song watched Dippler split open his scone. He packed the inside with blackberries, closed it, and bit into the whole thing so enthusiastically that juice squirted out from either side. Dan flicked drops of it from his nose.
You greedy savage! You'll never grow any taller, just rounder and fatter. Don't you, Blossom, have any table manners?
Dippler shrugged as he crammed cheese into his mouth.
Mm-mm. Of course we don't, 'cause Blossom never used tables. How'd you get a table on a logboat? We got shrew manners, though.
Song wiped her lips daintily on a dock leaf.
And what, pray, are shrew manners?
Dippler glugged down cordial to clear his voice.
Simple. 'Tis one of the first things a shrew babe learns.
Listen.
If you eat too much, you'll sink the boat, burst your boots, and split your coat. Just scoff enough so you stay afloat. 'Tis manners, good manners. If you pinch the victuals from another's plate, wait till he's looking the other way, mate. And when fish are biting, don't eat the bait. 'Tis manners, good manners. If you're a shrew of the Gwasim clan, you must be sure to think of a plan to share your matey's puddin' or flan. 'Tis manners, good manners. Remember to chew everything in sight. If it don't bite back, then get first bite. And always take a basinful to bed each night. 'Tis manners, good manners.
Song was chuckling so hard she nearly choked on a bite of scone. Dan sent Dipper sprawling with a playful shove.
Away, you rogue! Your mother never taught you that lot.
Dippler stole a piece of Song's cheese as he patted her back to restore her breath. He winked cheekily at Dan.
I don't dispute that, mate. I made it up myself.
Shh! What's that? Get down.
At Dan's urgent whisper, the three friends dropped down behind the fallen oak trunk. There they stayed, silent and motionless, for several moments, after which Song stood up slowly.
What was it you heard, Dan?
The young squirrel rose, turning his head this way and that, as he tried to pick up a trace of the sound he had heard.
I don't know. I heard something, but 'tis gone now.
Not much farther out from where the three were sitting, Jeltur, Predak, Askrod, and Vannon passed with the army of water rats, traveling in the opposite direction, toward Redwall Abbey, to begin their assault. Dippler finished up the remains of any food his friends had not eaten. Dan shouldered his pack and sword, weighing up the woodland surrounding them.
Which way now, Song?
The young squirrel maid walked to the east end of the glade where they had camped. Using the knowledge her father had passed on during their wanderings, she cast about carefully.
This way, I think. The ferns have been disturbed. See? One or two are broken. Grass looks flattened, too. Ha! Look at this!
Hanging from a broken hornbeam spur was a strand of red thread. Dippler and Dan studied it as Song voiced her thoughts.
That's from the tapestry. At a guess, I'd say it was being carried shoulder high by two or more creatures. See here amid the grass? One of them stumbled on this blackberry creeper and narrowly missed walking into the hornbeam tree. But the heavy roll of tapestry they were carrying snagged on that broken branch. They've gone this way.
Dippler wrapped the thread around his paw.
Stupid vermin. They're leaving a trail a blind moth could follow.
Dan pressed forward, calling back to the shrew.
Marl foxes aren't stupid, Dip. You must remember that they were running with a weighty object. It was still dark, and maybe they thought Redwallers might give chase. Stands to reason they'd want to put as much space between themselves and the abbey as possible.
Dippler pushed the bushes aside roughly.
Murdering thieves. They won't get away from me, matey.
Song cautioned her friends.
I suggest from now on that we keep our voices down. Don't talk unless 'tis necessary, and tread quietly. Best not leave a trail. Goodness knows who might follow it.
The vast woodland was unusually still and silent, even the sporadic bird song sounding as if it came from far away. Moving quietly eastward through the dense undergrowth, Song and her companions became cautious,
realizing that behind the beauty of stately trees and summer-flowering bushes, danger might lurk in the shape of the foe beast. At Redwall Abbey, a brief ceremony had been held over the resting place within the southwest wall corner. Four shrews, Ellicombe the Noonvale Otter, Nutwing, and Logalog, were honored with small gifts, flowers, and verses. Friar Butty sighed heavily, wiping his eyes on a spotted kerchief as they walked back to the abbey, where Deesum and Brother Melilot were preparing lunch. Skipper spoke loud enough for all to hear. "When we get time, there'll be a good stone marker carved for our poor mates back there, so they'll never be forgot by Redwallers. But for now, messmates, let's get back to the business of living and surviving. Jangler, Boracle, Mr. Florian, and myself will move Craig of Badgermum out of the gatehouse and up to her room. Bargle, will you and your Gwasim guard the walls? Arm yourselves with slings and bows and arrows. Runktip, stow yourself in the bell tower, and if the shrews tip you the signal that vermin are about, be ready to toll the alarm bells. Roop and Muggle, will you be kind enough to help Gubbio Formole and Sister Slowey check on the wounded?" Slowey fussed with her apron distractedly.
"Oh, dear, what with looking after the dibbins and getting things tidy, I almost forgot about our injured ones. Still, a good quiet rest's what they need most. We'll take them up some lunch, soon as 'tis ready."
A few minutes later, Florian entered the gatehouse and swept off his big floppy hat with a double flourish at the wounded badger. The friends were determined to cheer Crega and not let her dwell on her sadness or her injury.
"Ahem, ma'am. 'Tis only my good self, Wilfichop, come to inform you that your carriage waits without."
Crega turned her face in his direction. She was not in the best of moods after an uncomfortable night.
"I know 'tis you, Hare. And stop waving that hat about. You'll disturb the dust and have me sneezing. Now, what's all this about a carriage outside? You think I'm a helpless dibbin?"
Jangler nudged Skipper gleefully as he popped his head around the door. He announced in a loud, officious voice, as if talking to no beast in particular,
"One actor's cart, waiting to transport a wounded abbey beast. Is there a passenger in here?"
The big badger struggled upright from the couch, grabbing a broken spear shaft, which she waved threateningly.
"Just let any beast try to get me into a rickety actor's cart, and I'll give 'em a headache they won't get over for 10 seasons.
Jangler clapped a paw to his mouth to stifle laughter, while Skipper called out in a voice dripping with sincerity,
"Oh, ma'am, how can you say such things? All's we're thinking of is your health. After you've had a nice ride in the cart, we'll carry you up to your room and let Sister Slowey feed you on a nourishing lunch of herb broth and elderflower water."
That was enough for Craga. A deep rumble of anger burst forth from the mighty badger. Grabbing Florian and lifting him as if he were a babe, she stumped resolutely out of the gatehouse, with the helpless Hare protesting volubly.
"I say, ma'am, bad form. Put me down, what? Don't stand there grinning like ticks at a tea party, you chaps. Help me!"
Craig almost walked straight into the cart, which was drawn up just outside the gatehouse door. Feeling its contours with her paw, she dumped Florian unceremoniously into the seat and gave the cart a mighty shove. It flew off across the lawn, with the Hare still yelling.
"Most uncharitable of you, ma'am. I'll make a note of this peevish behavior. You can jolly well bet I will. Youch! Help!"
His pleas went unheard, as Kreger raised a threatening paw at the other helpers.
"If you've got any sense, you'll stay clear of me. I'll walk back to the abbey alone. Oh, and you can tell Slowey if she wants to see another season, she'd better not mention herb broth and elderflower water while I'm around. I need proper food, and the comfort of my own room for a day or two."
Skipper fled past her, tugging Jangler with him.
"Put a move on, matey. Dan and Dippler and your song have taken over Craig Amarm's room, so we better get there afore she does, and shift those young'uns out sharpish-like."
Baby Dwapple was wide awake, and none the worse after his ordeal. He elbowed his way in between Blenny the Mole Babe and Florian at the dining table for lunch.
"Where are vickles? I starvin'."
The Hare rescued his summer salad and apple pie, scowling at Dwapple.
"Have a care there, young wretchlet. I need all the nourishment I can lay me flippin' paws on. Recoverin' from a nasty cart accident, you know. I say, is that beechnut sponge I see? Chuck it this way, William, a good mole, what?"
I needs feeding, too. I escaped. I fighted off those bad beasts. I frighted Mr. Stickerby.
Craiga felt her way up the stairwell and gave the unlatched door of her room a light push. As it swung open, the badger entered, feeling about with outstretched paws.
Some beast's there. Come on, who is it?
Jangler's reply was tinged with foreboding.
Only me and Skipper, marm. But I ain't certain what's going on.
Craiga lowered herself into her favorite armchair as he continued.
Last night my song was put in here with young Dan and the shrew Dippler. You heard about what happened to them. They was injured. But they ain't here no more. And Skipper says that Martin's sword is missing from the wall yonder.
The badger mused over this information for a moment before replying.
It sounds a bit strange, but let's not dash into anything. They must be about somewhere. Probably still within the abbey.
Jangler was not convinced.
But what if they ain't?
The door behind them began creaking slowly shut, before a slight draft. Skipper pointed to it.
There's some markings scratched on that door.
Jangler inspected it closely, telling Craiga what he could see.
Fairly fresh scratches, marm. Done quick-like with a sharp point. 'Tis only four letters. G and T and G and T.
Skipper opened the door.
I'll go down and see if they're at lunch. Or they might be in the orchard. You two try and figure those letters out.
End of side 3. To continue, turn the cassette over.